we can focus on our weaknesses and we can focus on our troubles, or we can focus on our strengths. And I think that if we focus on our strengths, we can really make them work for us.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So I'm really excited to bring you this conversation this week. Dr. Mandeep Rai is a global authority on values, working with companies, institutions, and individuals around the world. She's traveled to over 150 countries and reported as a broadcast journalist for the BBC World Service and Reuters, among others. She began her career in private banking at JP Morgan and later worked for the UN, the European Commission, and her grassroots NGOs before setting up the UAE's first media venture capital fund. She launched her book, The Values Compass, at Davos in January, you know, back when we were allowed to travel. And the book has been on the London Sunday Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller lists. I think you're in for a real treat as we discuss how the responses of various countries to the pandemic can be predicted by their value systems, how studying value systems can make one a better futurist, and much more. So let's jump right in. I think one thing that I wanted to ask you, because I know that this is a thing that you're studying and talking about a little bit now, is, you know, your background in value systems and how it relates to the struggles that the world's going on now with, you know, dealing with COVID-19, and how there's, you know, some very close correlation, if you will, between those two. And, you know, it struck me, I mean, is this a grand social experiment in the sense that has there been anything like this where the whole world has been dealing with pretty much the same challenge simultaneously?
So you're right in that I look at values. I think for the last 20 years, really, I've been formulating the book that I've just written, which is called The Values Compass, looking at the whole world, 101 specific countries, and each of those countries I distilled into a value. What I didn't anticipate was that the moment the book comes out, instead of us all being part of one, you know, us all being global citizens and hopping around everywhere, suddenly we are all almost elasticated back or pinged back into our country and living the value of our nation. So to your question about whether how have things changed since the pandemic, and has there ever been a time when the world has experienced a similar experience? I would say there hasn't been a time. Even if you think about world wars, our experience of the world war has been very different depending on where we live. I don't think there's ever been a time when we've, even if you think about the Spanish flu or any other time when a virus has kind of panned its way across the globe, it's never done it quite to this degree. We've never had a moment where, you know, we're just weeks behind China and we're just quickly trying to catch up and learn how to manage this situation. And what we're finding is that for the first time ever, connectivity, the value of connectivity, is so apparent. For an incident to happen in one part of the world and for it to affect and immediately kind of begin to change all our lives in the same way, such that we're all in some form of lockdown, is mind-blowing, but yet our reality.
How has the coronavirus responses, you know, from these various cultures exposed the underlying, you know, values of various countries? Because to me, that's one of the most fascinating things about this.
Indeed, I didn't expect this to be the case. And by no stretch of the imagination did I ever think that this would be a predictive type of book. However, each and every country seems to have responded completely according to its value system. So my book looked at the history of each nation, the geography, the cultural circumstances, the social geopolitical climate of each nation over centuries, and hence they arrive at a particular value. So I believe that we all, humanity wants to evolve into its very best self, but how we end up doing that is really kind of shaped by the context that we're living in. Now, when the pandemic happened, actually China was extremely pragmatic in its approach, which is how it goes about most things, which is the value that I had said that I've written about and argued that it kind of puts to the forefront. Italy had this real kind of attention to detail or care. England remained in this kind of steadfast manner of keep calm, carry on, we've got this, we're just going to carry on, hopefully herd immunity will work, and oops, if that doesn't work, we'll just lock down, but we'll, you know, do this in a very kind of really like steadfast manner. America, an immediate pivot, kind of quite entrepreneurial in its approach. It went from one day this wasn't even an issue to the next day then deciding it was, and then people had to shift their lives. So I didn't expect the value system to be so predictive and informative, and yet it has been exactly that. And I think that's the case because these values haven't come about just yesterday. They've come about over centuries and centuries and centuries, millennia even, and hence the reaction that each country has had.
You know, another one that I was thinking of, which was really interesting, was South Korea, you know, because obviously they had one of the most early outbreaks. And I mean, I'm wondering, does this whole hypothesis about values being predictive, you know, did their values allow them to combat their outbreak with, you know, a degree of success that hadn't been found in some of the other early countries?
I think definitely. Their value is dynamism, that they're quick. They're very quick to respond. You see that in their trends of, you know, you see that in their fashion trends. You see it in their music. You see it in, we're talking about South Korea here. You see it in, you know, how quickly they're almost on speed. You know, it's like a trend which moves sometimes twice a day. They're constantly wanting to evolve and change and evolve and change. And they reacted in exactly the same way towards the pandemic. They were quickly created an app. They know who's carrying the virus, who isn't. They have a very kind of systematic, fast-paced approach, which I think has helped them enormously.
Another one that I was thinking about a little bit is Singapore, because, you know, I've studied cultures and most of my work has been international. So, you know, I think what I know of Singapore's value system or culture, you know, broadly speaking, it's very different from South Korea, but it still had notable success tackling the same problem, you know. So how can we explain that if we can?
I focused on the orderly nature of Singapore. And it has a huge advantage because it's a small island that's able to manage and almost, not that you can ever control everything, but, you know, control and be as orderly as you can be given the circumstances. So I think that advantage has really played out as a strength right now, which other places like South Korea or even more, you know, larger countries don't have necessarily that same advantage. And yet, I don't think it's even about size. So if you look at Australia, for example, it's not because it's big that it's been kind of successful at containing this, but rather because of its distance, and it was able to immediately look at the flights coming in and immediately impose quarantine and immediately make sure that there was some, you know, physical proper distance, that it's been able to control the pandemic in a really successful manner. And in fact, New Zealand, even more so, although the value system has definitely played a part in this, of course, the leadership and how reactive the leadership has been or not has also been hugely influential. And also, I think information, do we have and have we got the information that we need to make the decisions that we need to make? And I'm not sure how it is for you, but I would say from what I'm understanding, you know, the US is a little bit like the UK. They feel that there is some information, they're working on a lack of information.
Yeah. And I think whether or not we're willing to deal with that type of paradigm is something that obviously, you know, I'm sure is impacted, you know, informed by our values and our history also. I mean, it kind of makes me wonder, you know, how it helps us to study these values as a form of prediction, you know, just because the reason why I say that is that if we realize that certain things can be, you know, not advantageous to us in a time like this, you know, even if we know that, surely countries aren't going to just shift their value systems when they realize they're flawed, no?
Well, I wouldn't say a value system is ever flawed. I think you mean in terms of dealing with the pandemic. Even then, I think you can really utilize, okay, if I take a step back for a moment, a value is something that's of value or of importance to you. So it can always be, although it has a shadow side, and in extreme, it can potentially be negative, generally it's a strength. So like any strength, in extreme, it can, you know, it can be a problem. But if managed well, it would actually lead to greater success and greater enhancement. And so each and every single value can be utilized in this way. I think we have a danger of perhaps focusing overly on COVID-19, because the aim of this book was not to look at each country and think, do they or don't they react in accordance to their values? The aim of the book, and in fact, the way I answered the first question, is to think, what are my values? What's important to me right now? And how can I serve that best? How can I be my very best self? And so what I'm seeing across the world is that there's almost a global shift in values. Competitiveness perhaps isn't serving us right now. In fact, collaboration would serve us better. Compassion is serving us better right now. Building our communities, thinking about how to stay connected, being creative in that way, being able to be innovative and inspiring and caring and defiant and resilient. And these type of values are coming up. And so what we're seeing is that we're wanting those values to come from our leadership. And so the aim is really to think, if I were to lead my very best life, what is most important to me? What are the values that are most important to me? Because each and every single one of our decisions is based on our values. And if instead of always having your values kind of push and pull you, which they're doing all the time, if you decide on the outset, okay, we're in the COVID-19 period, or we're in this pandemic, what's most important to me at this point? And right for the next, let's say, 6 months, because there's a lot of uncertainty, or 3 months, or 2 months, or however, whatever period of time you want to give yourself. If you have almost give yourself 15, 20 minutes to go through this process of thinking what's most important, I take you through that process in the book. It doesn't take very long, but it's important because it helps you do a little bit of thinking right at the upfront, so that then little minor or major decisions that you're going to have to make throughout your day or throughout your week or throughout your month become easier to make and the angst is taken away. So, yes, so I was just going to say that at this point, we are finding that we have all been kind of united by the one value of health and life and health, and that it's saving lives. Yes, we've been united by that. But how we go about our lives, even within that framework, is the question to ourselves. And that's the process I take you through.
So another thing, you know, I know obviously we'll bounce back and forth, you know, between, you know, topics here. But I'm wondering, like, if we go a little bit broader and we go even away from the idea of, you know, the pandemic, and if we just kind of like, I think that the values are probably in some ways, you know, like correlated or, you know, have some type of connection to the history of different cultures. And, you know, and I think the same thing could probably be true for businesses, which is, you know, businesses, they get their own culture based off of, you know, leaders and based off of where their people are coming from. And, you know, please tell me if I'm wrong about any of this or part of this, but, you know, how informed are our values by our experiences, you know, as individuals and as collectives?
Massively informed. So I've seen that values are shaped in two different ways. One, nature, and two, nurture. So we do find that certain experiences you might have been through certain experiences that by the time you're 18, your values are pretty much formed. For example, if something normally happens at around the age of 5, and then 13, and then a little bit later, 17. You know, you have this sense of, oh, I'm not sure I belong here, or I'm not sure, how do I navigate myself in the world? And as some things work or some things don't work, and as you go through certain experiences, your values will be formed in your subconscious without you realizing. Now, thereafter, you have to make a conscious decision as to whether your values are serving you or not. Often, you don't even know what your values are. So if I ask you what's most important to you, or what's driving you, or what's motivating you, or what are your values? If I ask you, what are your values? I don't even think people talk like that. Like, it's a super difficult question to answer. But if I said to you, what drives you, or what motivates you, or who do you admire, and what are the characteristics that they have, is probably similar to something that is close to what you value or what you think is important. And as you go through that type of questioning, you get closer to what you think is kind of how you're reacting to stuff. You can see how you're reacting, what you're triggered by, what feels like a violation, or what always pulls you. But equally, it's a moment in time where you can think, am I going to let my life be geared by that gear stick or that value system, or am I going to choose X, Y, and Z? So it's a moment where this is why I ask you to take a moment, a time frame. If you take a particular time frame, you can decide, and goals really help. You can decide, okay, over COVID-19, this is my goal. Or I'm going to take, you know, the most important thing right now is my health, let's say. Or I'm going to focus on this particular promotion, whatever it be in front of you. That kind of helps you think about what you're choosing, the values that you're choosing, as opposed to the values that you're always reacting from.
And then I was just thinking about that. It's a really interesting way of putting it. And I mean, how about as we're thinking about kind of businesses, let's say, because I'm very interested to see, you know, how a business might learn one thing, you know, from one particular situation. And then as a result, you know, like that's a massive moment that then leads it, you know, to a shift in their values. And I think probably the same thing's true for countries. So like a country like the US, if it's harmed by its values, you know, maybe a few years down the line, we won't value personal freedom as much because we'll realize that it cost us too much, let's say. So how do, you know, businesses and, you know, countries and organizations almost use their history and use their experiences in order to pivot and, you know, shift their value systems?
Well, at the moment, we're seeing that companies are changing and leaps and bounds, as in the shifts that they've been through and the shifts that they've made and the adaptation that's occurred in the last 6 to 8 weeks would normally have taken 4 or 5 years. And this is because the leadership is being really kind of tested and questioned, and there's a greater sense of collaboration, and people aren't saying, we want our leader. You know, there's by everything being remote, it means that communication has changed. And one of the impacts of that is the fact that people are able to respond faster, are able to fill out polls, are able to be on Zoom calls, are able to speak or interact in a particular way. And in a way that's kind of almost non-threatening, and sometimes in a way that's even more anonymous. And so people are saying, well, what would help in our organization right now is, let's say, greater compassion. We're also seeing that we're a little bit intertwined into each other's lives for the fact that we're all operating from our homes. So it's natural that you see what's happening in the background. You see, you know, what my setup is, who my family is, what circumstances are, where I live, et cetera, et cetera. And so this intertwining has meant that leaders are having to respond in a more engaged, compassionate, caring manner. And those companies that have really thrived right now are those companies that have managed to put all kinds of resources and platforms in place to look after their employees, their mental well-being, their physical well-being. Think about, okay, their situation is this at the moment, and this is the, you know, setup that would work for them. How can we keep them engaged? How can we keep them inspired? But equally, also doing things for the community that will also inspire and engage their employees. So companies that haven't managed to do that, you're also seeing a disengagement from those, or they will naturally, you know, start to, you change and you survive or thrive, or you don't and you're going to die. So we're seeing a combination of the two happening quite quickly right now.
Well, it in some ways, it makes me think about how there's so much luck involved because, you know, going back to the pandemic for a second, you know, this is a black swan event that's very difficult to predict. And I couldn't help but think, you know, my country of the US is not well equipped based off of, you know, our own value system and our experiences and what we value, and having a decentralized government with a lot of autonomy for these individual governors. But the fact is, people are going across state lines. So you really need one solution. And, you need a strong, you know, maybe almost authoritarian government in some ways, or you need people to be willing to sacrifice for the greater good. And we've had very little self-sacrifice for a very long time in the States. And all of that made me kind of think, oh God, like we're, you know, less equipped than anybody else. And if you look at, you know, the data and how we've done, it's hard to argue that. So I'm wondering how does, you know, like happenstance, if you will, you know, inform destiny, you know, both at a corporate level and, you know, with countries. If you might have a value system in place, you can't pivot, you know, strategies and your culture, you know, 90 degrees in, you know, 10 seconds. So I feel like a lot of luck is certainly involved now.
So you feel that America potentially is, its value system has meant that you're possibly ill-equipped for this time. And yet, this is an important year. It's an election year. And two, if your core value is pivot, being able to change and being able to adapt, there's no greater time than now to be able to learn, okay, that what we were didn't work, but what we can be is X, Y, Z. Like, just as I said that this could be your greatest strength and your greatest weakness, the fact that you're able to see what's working and what's not working, and you're going to pivot. You are a nation that bounces back each and every time and will keep on pivoting or, you know, reframing until you find something that works. That's an incredible asset. And even though it may be as you're going through that change, you know, something has to die in order for something to something new to be formed. Even when you're going through that kind of catharsis, it might not feel great, but it's not just because you're American that I'm saying, I have a lot of hope. And I don't mean to be, I do think that you can look at the world in many different ways. And I chose to look at the world in a deliberately positive way. So, you know, I looked at the value of hope from Ghana. I looked at the value of resilience from Vietnam. I looked at the value of humility from Uruguay. I looked at the value of introspection from Germany. That's not to say that each of these nations don't have massive problems or flaws or issues, just like America does. Of course, everyone does. And in each of us, we can focus on our weaknesses and we can focus on our troubles, or we can focus on our strengths. And I think that if we focus on our strengths, we can really make them work for us.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's great to be positive, because I think all you can do is lean into the best aspects of what you have going for you in order to, you know, come at, you know, good solutions and, you know, finding the right strategies to get through things. And as you were talking, it also really struck me that in some ways you have these values that even within different, you know, organizations, but, you know, obviously within countries as well, you have different groups. And in some cases, these groups are thrust together simply because some colonial power drew a line in a certain place. And then as a result, you have maybe a bit of confusion in values because there are two different groups that maybe didn't necessarily want to live, you know, within the same land. And I wonder, is that a strength or a weakness? Because, you know, obviously the U.S., for instance, we have a lot of that, you know, for different reasons. Some people chose to be here, some people didn't, and they're, you know, you're just thrown together. But then I think about the Middle East and Africa, you know, in particular, about two places that have seen a lot of strife come from that. And it seems to me it's hard to say if it's inherently a good thing or a bad thing to have these different systems clash.
Indeed. So I have a lot of personal experience of these lines being drawn. I'm Punjabi, and Punjab was literally split in the middle. And half of my family had to go over the line, like transport themselves, leave their whole life behind on one side of Punjab and go to the other side of the Punjab and create a whole new life. Now, you're right that when people are forced together or when lines are dividing cultures, what does that mean? I think that, in fact, that is what's also forming the value system. So, for example, in Pakistan, you're finding that even when there were times when the government really, it was questionable whether it was serving its population and contributing to its population, but its population had to then kind of, and it's only 70 years old, it's only, you know, just being crafted out of that line in the sand, had to then evolve itself into being quite courageous, often in the face of real dangers, and often, you know, to have to face its own government and to say, no, despite the fact that we're taking risks with you, we are going to stand for, let's say, looking after. I remember, oh, there's so many specific stories within the book, but I remember this one time when I saw that there was like the umbilical cord was being thrown out of this hospital window. Like, you know, after the birth would take place, they would throw the kind of the aftermath of the birth outside of the hospital window. And what they found were these cats, the local cats, were becoming fatter and fatter and, in fact, quite aggressive. And that's because the cats would come up and eat the aftermath of the birth, you know, from this birthing center and this hospital. So soon you found that there was this real awful kind of situation being created. And someone had to take that into their own hands. No government was going to come and clean up those streets or close that hospital or change what all the practices that were happening. So that's one example of kind of courage in the face of almost these dangerous wild cats and also the government and the state, etc. I also talk about, I mean, there were so many courageous moments and courageous characters that came out of Pakistan at that time. And yet with India, you saw that people turned to faith, you know, like, yes, you have families that are being divided or families that are having to shift and a whole culture that's now having to suddenly create into two. But we can see that they're kind of the way that faith has permeated and has always permeated almost every layer of society in India, every question, every circumstance, that it was almost strengthened, although it's a secular society and has in fact more Muslims in India than there are in Pakistan. You can see that the kind of alignment to faith and protection of faith and utilizing faith became even stronger as a result of that experience. And in fact, with Ghana, since we're talking about lines in the sand, you see that hope was almost needed even more so because of the colonial past, and utilized even more so. So I'm not saying that I'm painting a pretty rosy picture of each of these places, and that it's not true, but that we use our values. Our values are like a treasure trove. We all have these values and virtues inside of ourselves. And it's up to us as to which one we want to shine a light upon. I think people inherently have compassion, grace, forgiveness, you know, competitiveness. I'm not saying that any value is right or wrong, but I'm saying that we have a choice as to which we focus upon. And those, each of our cultures, because of their history and because of the colonial lines and because of what's happened, chooses to then pivot and focus on whatever serves for its very best self.
Yeah, well said. I had one other question, and I feel like in some ways this is the thread throughout everything that we've talked about, but so it's partially been answered already, but I'm still going to ask it. In what ways, you know, does studying value systems make one a better futurist? You know, what's the case you can make for that?
I'm a firm believer that our future is in our own hands. Even though we are sitting right now in lockdown and you can think that it is in someone else's hands, that you don't have a job or that you've been furloughed or that you can't step out of your own house or that you can make a whole list of the things you can't do and why your future is not in your own hands. And, you know, you don't know what travel will look like tomorrow. You don't know if you're most likely going to have to be in quarantine if you go somewhere and quarantine when you come back. And so, you know, a whole list of things which will show you that your future is not in your own hands, yet it is absolutely in your own hands in terms of how you react to it, how you adapt towards it, how you make any situation you're in work for you. And I think the way to do that is to say, okay, I have a choice right now as to where I'm going to shine this light, you know, what I'm going to put my focus upon. Let me put my focus upon something that's going to make my future the way I want it to be, rather than me always reacting to my outside circumstances in my old given pattern or my old way. Not to say there's anything wrong with your old way, but that in this moment in time, as in every moment in time, we have a choice, and let's make that kind of a more empowered choice.
I like that. I think you're going to give people a lot to think about. But Mandeep, this is a really great. Thank you so much for making the time.
Of course. Thank you for having me. And I hope it's been of value. Excuse the pun. And, you know, the values compass really is a moment where we can direct or guide our future to, you know, to take the feature point. It's a really a 15-minute tour, but it sets you off towards your kind of true north in a way that really resonates with your most intuitive and best you.
Thanks again to Mandeep Rai for making the time. And I really hadn't thought, to be honest, even though I've done a lot of my work historically within global markets, I hadn't really thought about how value systems in some ways inform our strategies, you know, as economies. And I think that I definitely learned a lot from this one. So thanks again to her. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get this show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.